Chapter 6. An Invitation. Lunch Together. Mark spent the early part of the week working on his business commitments. He tried to dispense with these as quickly as possible, in order to reserve some time for a meeting with his new acquaintance, John Westwood. By Thursday, Mark had completed most of his business affairs and decided to phone John. During their telephone conversation, they agreed to meet in the city for lunch that afternoon. "Here's the restaurant coming up now," John announced as the two men strolled down the sidewalk through Vancouver's business section. When they entered the restaurant, John paused for a moment to purchase a newspaper. As they sat down and waited for a menu, John spread out the Vancouver Sun across the table. While turning the pages, he explained to Mark, "Just thought I would try to spot an ad that I'm interested in. My church is holding a public lecture this evening, and I thought that I would show it to you. Ah, here it is." Turning the paper around toward Mark, he nudged it across the table and then pointed in the direction of the ad. Mark read it with interest. "Immortality of the Soul, Astray from Bible Teaching. Lecture at Fraser Auditorium, UBC Campus, Thursday, May 20th, 7 p.m. No collection, all welcome." "Well, that sounds rather challenging," Mark commented in a guarded tone. "Are you planning on going, John?" "Yes, I hope to, Mark. Does it interest you at all?" Mark replied, "I guess we didn't cover that subject when we were talking on the plane. How about filling me in a little about your views on this? The title seems to be challenging the belief that man has an immortal soul, or have I misunderstood?" "No," responded John, looking directly at Mark. "You have it right. The lecture will probably consider the biblical evidence against the notion of man having an immortal soul, and present the Bible's own definition of man's nature, and when immortality will be given in the future." Mark's face became slightly flushed. "John," he asked stiffly, "are you suggesting that the most common conviction of Christendom is not based on Bible teaching? I really can't swallow that. Why, that fundamental belief has been held by the majority for centuries." "No question about that last point, Mark. But to be fair, the length of time that a belief has been held, and the number of those who hold it, does not prove the correctness of any doctrine. Take Buddhism, for example. It began even before the birth of Christ, but it has teachings that both of us would reject. And for the number of followers, Buddhism would easily have more adherents than Catholicism, but that doesn't prove that its beliefs are right." The Soul and the Sacraments. The waitress came to their table, and the two men placed their lunch orders. "You see, belief in the immortality of the soul is the underlying foundation of the seven sacraments of my church." John looked puzzled. "How's that again, Mark?" "Well, as Roman Catholics, we believe that man's immortal soul is an essential part of his being. It's the spiritual principle within man, the part of man that is open or receptive to God's direct influence, which we would call God's grace." "I see," said John, "but what's the link with the seven sacraments?" "Each of the sacraments, when administered by the church, produces grace in the soul. We understand this sanctifying grace to be the giving of supernatural energy or power to man's soul. To deny the immortality of the soul, John, is to deny the whole function of the sacraments, and with them, the Catholic understanding of the operation of grace." Mark brightened as he noticed John's interest. "I can't be detailed here, but Catholics believe that Christ instituted seven sacraments or visible signs, which were to signify the giving of sanctifying, supernatural grace to the soul. Catholics often describe these as basic steps in a person's life. When a child is born, it is baptized in order to cleanse its soul from original sin, so that he or she becomes a child of God and an heir of heaven. Baptism infuses into the soul the Christian virtues, which we describe as faith, hope, love, justice, prudence, temperance, and fortitude." "And those virtues are actually infused into the soul?" repeated John. "Yes," affirmed Mark. "And when a child reaches the age of reason, it is then given confirmation. By this sacrament, the child's soul receives the Holy Ghost to make him a perfect Christian and soldier of Christ. At the end of life, the sacrament of extreme unction prepares the soul for its last passage. By this rite, the soul is healed by the remission of all sins for which it is truly sorry. This sacrament of the sick, as we also call it, prepares the soul for death by fortifying it for the temptations that may try a person in the last hour of death." "What about the importance of marriage, Mark?" asked John. "Isn't that a sacrament too?" "Right," replied Mark. "Between confirmation and extreme unction, most Catholics will experience the sacrament of matrimony. As the priest administers this sacrament to the couple, the sacramental grace of marriage is given to their souls as an aid to marital faithfulness. It is a grace that strengthens their souls to walk in unity and raise their family as faithful Catholics. What about the last two sacraments? Quizzed John. You said there were seven. The sacrament of holy orders, or priesthood, continued Mark, is conferred by the laying on of a bishop's hands to indicate the passing on of the apostolic powers to a new minister of God. In the case of a priest, for example, this sacrament empowers his soul with a special grace which will enable him to minister to the souls of others. You believe then, questioned John, that this special grace for holy orders is what helps prepare a priest's soul to be a minister to his people? Yes, agreed Mark. After a pause, he continued, the remaining two sacraments, which are repeated more than once, also bring a man's soul under the direct influence of God's grace. The sacrament of penance, or confession, has the sacramental effect of restoring the soul to sanctifying grace if it has fallen. The confession of venial sins increases grace in the soul and strengthens it against future temptation. And then, lastly, participation of the Eucharist, or communion, nourishes the soul and complements the healing effects of penance and extreme unction. In fact, some catechisms call the Eucharist the medicine of immortality, because it is quite literally the bread of life. At this point, the waitress brought their lunch. After a while, they continued their discussion while they finished eating. Well, said John, you've opened my eyes to the central importance of the immortal soul to Roman Catholic teaching. I knew that it was important, but to be honest, I didn't realize how it unified so many aspects of Catholic belief. I suppose, then, that we could extend the importance of the immortal soul belief to other related Catholic beliefs, such as purgatory, indulgences, the judgment of hell, and the state of limbo. Would that be right? Exactly, John, agreed Mark. Each of those other doctrines would also be meaningless if the Catholic definition of man's soul was an error, but it isn't, of course. Then all of this would give you plenty of reason to consider such an important belief by coming out to our lecture, right? John urged, giving the last word a slight emphasis. Mark quickly caught the twist in John's invitation. He began to grin and replied, All right, I see how you've steered to that point. Let's pay the bill and talk a little more on the way back to the parking lot. The two men left the restaurant, and as they returned to their cars, Mark considered the lecture invitation. Seeing that he had so wholeheartedly agreed to the importance of the immortal soul doctrine, he found it difficult to say no to John. Well, John, I guess I'm agreeable. I'm sure enough about my convictions on this to have them questioned. Meet you outside the lecture hall? Suggested John. That'll be fine, agreed Mark. The two men nodded to each other and departed for their cars.